So here is a very interesting question. Can something which is not a mitzvah be even greater than a mitzvah? The Torah portion of Vayikra is speaking about sacrifices. The entire book of Vayikra is dedicated to sacrifice, and the first chapter of it is opening up with the laws of sacrifices. And then it says, when a person will bring a present, a sacrifice to God. So right away, all the commentators focus on the extra word which they see there, a present sacrifice. It doesn't have to say present. It just says a person will want to bring sacrifice to God. So why does it say present? Because they say that when it's speaking about here, it's not speaking about narrowly sacrifices. It's speaking about any donation to the temple. Like, for example, people could bring their personal sacrifices, but then they could also donate cattle for communal sacrifices. So that's not their personal sacrifice, it's a communal sacrifice. Well, that's pretty obvious. We can understand that, right? But then it says, another example is if a person brings wood for the sacrifices. One second. Wood for the sacrifices is something which is not even holy, it's not even a sacrifice, it's just wood. You obviously need wood for sacrifice because sacrifice is requiring fire burning. So to have the fire burning, you need to have wood. That's obvious. But why would somebody think that bringing wood for the sacrifices is as great, as big, as important as sacrifices themselves? And then there's another question. We see in our history that bringing wood for sacrifices for some reason was a very big thing. Even though it doesn't say anywhere in Torah that thou shalt bring wood for the sacrifices. There's no mitzvah to bring wood for sacrifices. It's not even mentioned anywhere, anything specific about the wood. Just technically, it has to be wood. Wood seems to be just a very technical necessity. It doesn't have to be holy. It doesn't have to be sanctified. There's no brocha on bringing wood. There's no brocha on lighting wood. There's nothing specific about this wood. We need the fuel. That's it. But we see in our history that bringing wood for some reason was very important, to the point that when the Jews came from their Babylonian exile, where they were for 7 years, back to Jerusalem and rebuilt the second temple, they, upon arrival back to Jerusalem, realized that their storages of wood that was there from the first temple were completely ransacked and depleted. They had big, big storages of wood for the temple because, temple required a lot of wood. And they had big storages with this wood. And as you know, the nature in the central Israel, where Jerusalem is not exactly conducive to growing forests. All of the forests that Israel has now there are artificial. And back then, I'm sure they didn't have the irrigation system that modern technology built. So it was very hard to grow forests, and to bring wood from far away was obviously difficult and expensive. And you could not do it in very large amounts. So wood was very precious. And that's why in Jerusalem, they had storages of wood for the temple. When Jews came back from the Babylonian exile and rebuilt the second temple, they saw that these storages were depleted. They needed new wood. And as you know, probably when you bring wood for your fireplace here, it has to be seasoned. It has to be dried. Regular wood is not, green wood is not going to burn well. So you need to cut it, you need to chop it, you need to season it, you need to dry it, and then only you can use it. It's a whole long process. And different families have committed themselves to bring wood for the temple. And it says that the day that when a family would bring wood for the temple would be a personal holiday for that family. You know that we have biblical holidays like Yom Tov, where we can't drive, we can't work, we can light fire unless it's for food. These are like Rosh Hashanah and Shavuot and Sukkot and Pesach, these holidays. Then we also have lower level holidays like Rosh Chodesh, beginning of new month, or Chanukah or Purim. These are days when you're allowed to perform work, you're allowed to light fire, but you are not allowed to say sad prayers on that day. You're not allowed to do anything which is associated with sadness or mourning on that day. You are also not allowed to fast on that day. So when a family would bring wood for the temple on a certain day, for that family, that day was instituted as their personal holiday. They would not be allowed to say sad prayers on that day. They would not be allowed to fast on that day. So much so that there's such an interesting technical situation. On the 9th of Av, we have a fast which is dedicated to the destruction of a temple, right? So on the 9th of Av, it's a fast day. Families would not bring wood on the 9th of Av. They would bring day before, day after, but they wouldn't bring it on the 9th of Av. But they would bring it day after. They would bring it on the 10th of Av. Now, the 9th of Av could sometimes be pushed off to the 10th of Av. Why? Because when 9th of Av falls out on Shabbat, we don't fast on Shabbat. So when a fast day and the Shabbat are on a collision course, one of them has to give. So we push the fast of 9th of Av to the following day. With Yom Kippur, we don't do it. Yom Kippur overrides Shabbat. But 9th of Av is overridden by Shabbat. So they push it off for the next day, for the 10th of Av. But this family has a holiday on 10th of Av, and you're not allowed to fast on the 10th of Av. The law is that this family would not fast on the 10th of Av. This shows how great of a holiday it was. It was even overriding the fast of 9th of Av, which is dedicated to destruction of a temple. So what's so great, what's so big about donating wood for the temple? So first of all, it is a very interesting thing. What is the purpose of every sacrifice in a temple? The purpose of every sacrifice in a temple is to help people become better, become more elevated, to become more refined, to work on themselves. That was the purpose of every specific sacrifice. And each sacrifice was dedicated to something intentional that it was meant to be helped to work on. Each sacrifice was dedicated. We had sacrifice, for example, obviously we had sacrifices which were meant to be brought when people did something wrong as a rectification for wrongdoing. Then there were sacrifices that were mandatory everyday sacrifices. Then there were sacrifices that were sacrifices of thankfulness when we want to thank God, or many other sacrifices that each one of them was meant to work on something specific within the person. Technically, the temple is the only place where we could bring sacrifice, correct? We're not allowed to bring sacrifice here on our backyard. But also, in the times of a temple, we were on the spiritual level where if we would bring sacrifice, we would feel how we would get elevated spiritually from it. Once the temple was destroyed, our spiritual level was diminished. And now, when we would bring sacrifice, we would not be elevated from it. Today, you'll come over to a person, you'll say, well, do you want to become a better person? Here, slaughter a cow. Look at you like you fell off the moon. Why? Because today we don't feel it. So God said, for you, it doesn't make sense anymore to bring sacrifices because you'll be just wasting good animals for no reason. Only when we had a spiritual use out of it, we were growing spiritually from sacrifice, that's when we were bringing them. So today we don't feel it. That's why we don't have sacrifice. Back in the day, Jews felt how they were becoming more elevated spiritually from each sacrifice in a specific way, how the sacrifice is meant to help you work on yourself. This is why they were bringing sacrifices. Now, what about wood? Wood for sacrifice was the same wood for every single sacrifice. So that means that wood was really helping people to work on all of their traits together. It wasn't specific to a trait that we wanted to rectify. So wood has a much broader appeal, much broader use. And then something else. When people would bring wood, they would bring wood not for their own sacrifices. They would bring wood for someone else's sacrifices. So I'm bringing wood. For what? For someone else to become purer, to become more elevated, to grow in his spiritual life. I'm not even doing it for myself. You see, most of the things that I am doing in the spiritual realm, I'm doing it because I'm going to grow from it spiritually. Every mitzvah I do, I'm growing spiritually from it. Every time I put on tefillin, I'm growing spiritually from it. Every time I give charity, I give tzedakah, I grow spiritually from it. Every time I make a Kiddush Friday night, I grow spiritually from it. Because it's a mitzvah. What about wood? It's not a mitzvah. I am not growing spiritually from it. Only someone else is growing spiritually from it. I'm not gaining anything from it. Not physically, not spiritually. So God says, that's why it's such a great thing. It's not a mitzvah. It's even greater than a mitzvah. You are doing something which you have zero gain, even zero spiritual gain from. That's why it's so great And not only that, people who bring sacrifice, they walk out of the temple feeling much better about themselves. I just now did something that allowed me to grow. A guy who brought wood for the temple, he walks out. I didn't gain anything. I didn't grow anything. What did I do? I didn't even do a mitzvah. It wasn't even a mitzvah. He has nothing to brag about. But that's the point. That's why it's such a great thing, because he has nothing to brag about. There's a story in the Jewish folklore about a time when in certain Jewish circles, it was noticed that people were people of great Torah knowledge and people who excelled at rabbinic studies. They would feel very proud of their achievements. And there was a certain set of Jewish elite that was created back then. And the sense of elitism was very prevalent in these circles. So they decided to combat it. How do they combat it? They would literally go around saying, you know what, I'm a nothing, I'm really nothing, I am a nobody, I don't deserve anything. So they say that these two big rabbis are sitting in a synagogue in the middle of the day and mumble under their noses, I'm a nothing, I'm a such a nothing, I'm a nobody, I'm a nothing, I'm a nobody. The simple Jew walks into a synagogue and he sees these two big rabbis are sitting and mumbling, I'm a nothing, I'm a nobody. He sits next to them and figures out, probably that's the right thing to do now. That's what big rabbis are doing. Probably I need to do it also. He sits next to them and starts mumbling, same thing. I'm a nothing, I'm a nobody, I'm a nothing, I'm a nobody. These two big rabbis turn around and say, look at him. Look at who's claiming he's a nobody. So in Hasidic tradition, there was a big push to make sure that you won't get this feel of elitism. As a matter of fact, the entire Hasidic movement was created specifically because there were Jews who felt ostracized by these educated elite. And Baal Shem Tov, even though he was a great Torah scholar himself, and his students were great Torah scholars, just to become a student of Baal Shem Tov, you had to be already in top tiers of Jewish education. So even though they were all very educated people, they went to simple folk who were trying to educate and elevate and inspire them. So in Hasidic circles, it was historically always the very big emphasis on making sure that you won't have this sense of elitism. And how is that? Because it was said that you don't have to only bring sacrifices. You also have to bring wood for the sacrifice. You know what? Wood for sacrifice, on one hand, doesn't offer you sense that you did the mitzvah. You have nothing to be proud of. Doesn't help you grow spiritually. You have nothing to show for yourself. But it is much greater for a mitzvah. And how do we see it? Because it could be used for any of the sacrifices. It is so spiritual that it's not even specific to any sacrifice alone. It is very generic because it is something which is higher than individual sacrifices. There was a Hasidic rabbi whose name was Menachem Mendel of Kotzk. He was, besides for being a very righteous person, great Torah scholar, he was also known to be very sharp. And specifically very sharp with his words. People knew that if he has something to say about you, which is not very pleasant, you better stay away. So Menachem Mendel of Kotzk said that he prefers a wicked man who knows that he's a wicked man to a righteous man who knows that he's a righteous man. Because a righteous man who knows he's a righteous man is full of appreciation of how righteous he is. When I was in yeshiva, we had many farbrengens, informal Hasidic gatherings with our teachers. And sometimes these farbrengens were more general. Sometimes they were specific to certain students. Sometimes our teachers would deal with students one by one. And I remember at one of the farbrengens, towards already later part of the farbrengen, these farbrengens would go till usually very, very late, or I should say very, very early. On the clock, there's no such a thing as late, because till 1 o'clock, it's not late yet, and then just gets early. So it was in the later part of the farbrengen, after a few l'chaims, the teacher would, at that time, turn to one of the guys in yeshiva who was with me together, who this particular person, who I knew very well, he was a friend of mine, was like a guy who was really excelling at everything. And this teacher turns to him and says, you know what? I have something to say about you. To learn Talmud is very hard. You need to have a very good brain for it. You need to have very specific skill for it. And you don't have any problem with it. Other people might hear that you are excelling at Talmud study. To learn Jewish law, you need to have a little different way of brain development. Some people are better at this one. Some people are better at that one. You have them both down pat. You are great at studying Talmud. You're great at studying Jewish law. To learn Hasidus, it's a third type of way of thinking, Hasidic teachings. And you are great at that too. Most of people are better at one and worse at the other. They're struggling with this one. They're not so good at that one. You have all of them figured out. Not only that, when you study Hasidus, what we emphasize, not only that you should study it as a theoretical study, theoretical subject, it should affect on you. You should work on yourself. You should be permeated with what you are learning, and you should make it part of your life. And I see you do that too. You're excelling at that as well. So you are good at everything that yeshiva could possibly offer you. And that is your biggest problem, he says. So the Torah is telling us that we need to not only do mitzvahs that allow us to have spiritual growth, not only do mitzvahs that allow us to be proud of ourselves, feel good about ourselves. We need to do things that we have no gain, even no spiritual gain from, that we have nothing to brag about afterwards. But sometimes these things could be even greater than a mitzvah.